Blog Talk Radio.
Checker, swinging sword lecture, closing down the sector, supreme neck protector, better want him kid, Mr. Mester, falling pop, about to blow his lid from the pressure, too hot for TV, for cheesy, too many want to be hard, be easy, it's all in together, going on, out together, it don't take much to please me, still homes, I'm never satisfied like the stones, we joking, don't bite and see them selling crossbones, protecting what I'm writing, don't clash with the titan, who blast with a license, to keep rap recitings, come on, in the zone with your from the group home, decal,
your lifestyle,
put your lights out. Get this shit crackin', got you feeling with your p***s out. Time for some action. Surfing the avenue, mad at you. Where I used to battle crew, back when that's when that had that attitude. Cover me, I'm going in. Walls closing in. Got us busting off these my got issues again. Same song, armed with the mega bomb. Blow you out the frame, then I'm gone.
Look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane.
The funk doctor spot, they're on the track.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Shaking Up Sports Show. I'm your host, Cordell Woodland, joined by my co-host, Brian Queet, and happy Madden Tuesday. It is Madden Day. We all shout out to all the Madden players out there, you know what I'm saying? Brian Queet being one of them, one of my victims in the past.
Victims, get off yourself.
Yes, victims
count
plenty
trophies,
of times.
Count trophies, count rings. You live in the shadow, my friend.
I have a trophy. So I'm good. You know what I'm
saying? You're like
the Kurt Rambis
of Madden. You collecting trophies just off of, I don't know, victims, nothing.
Hey, I play who's in front of me. You know what I'm saying? I'm a vet in this game, and not even you can steal my joy today. Not even you. I'm excited for the show, for Madden, for everything. And one of the biggest things that got me excited is USA's dominance of this year's Summer Olympics. We went out there, completely dominated the opponents. There wasn't a country that came close to us in the medal count. Hell, even our women had more medals than every country but two countries. We went out there and got 121 total medals. Closest country to us was China with 70. Do you think that this is what we're expecting to see from the Olympics going forward?
Well, first off, I think this is the second time ever in USA history that we had more women contestants than men contestants. There was more women competing than men. So those women actually went up there and showed out. And I think we had like 434 athletes or something crazy like that. So, you know, we brought the most, but, you know, it's not like they didn't show up and compete. We did what we had to do. And, you know, I'm looking at the breakdown here. We completely dominated swimming, 33 medals. Completely dominated track and field, 32 medals. I mean, 16 golds, 13 golds. Gymnastics, completely dominated that. It wasn't just one thing. You know, we know we're going to win basketball. We know we're going to win a couple of these. But we went across the board, medaled in almost everything we possibly could. In some events, we medaled gold, silver, and bronze. And I don't know. I think, you know, we needed that because with all the BS with the politics with Trump and Hillary and no one wanting to vote for anyone and no one having any pride in the United States, the athletes kind of gave us 2 weeks of a little bit of a break where we can be proud about who we are and what we do.
Right. I mean, exactly. And I think the biggest thing that the difference in the medal count shows is that we're just so much far superior athletically than other countries. I mean, even our women, as you said, they're lights out. Anything that they did, from gymnastics to track and field to basketball, hell, to even just shooting the rifle shooting contest, we in weightlifting, we have just dominated as a whole, as a country. It felt good, like you said, with everything that's going on in the country, to see us be able to go out there and look like a collective unit. You know, come together, which is something that we seem to struggle with inside the country. But it's good that the majority of the people that we sent over to Rio make it look like that we are together, because they Team USA this year was just lights out, lights out. There was no competition really in anything that we really decided to dominate in. We dominated across the board, men's basketball team winning the gold medal, going out there just completely blowing the doors off Serbia by 40 points. I mean,
yeah,
even Harrison Barnes got on
the floor. Hey, he's a champion. Leave the man alone.
No, Harrison Barnes is a scrub. I have a whole type of way about Harrison Barnes. I'm trying my hardest. I'm trying.
Collegiate and NBA.
No, it's not enough. He's not good enough.
And
but
high
despite
school.
Him, despite him, we're still dominant. We still went out there and destroyed everything.
Are you going to get off my man KD's back finally?
I am. KD, I like KD. I don't want it to be a situation to where it seems like I don't like KD. The Kevin Durant I saw
that's what it
the last
like
three
every
games.
Time.
No, it's not. I get frustrated with Kevin Durant because I know he's very much capable of doing what we saw him do in the championship game, in the gold medal game, and the two games prior. I know he's fully capable of doing that night in and night out. It's the same beef that you have with LeBron. It's no different. Kevin Durant is very much
your beef is you want him to go out there and put up 30 shots. The man is patient. He takes what he gets. That's why he goes 6-for-6. That's why he's the most efficient scorer in NBA history.
But you sit here and get on LeBron about not being this and that, but Kevin Durant, who's a better scorer than LeBron James.
Durant is more, but he is a better scorer.
Okay,
but
LeBron
is more physical talent. LeBron is a more physical talent. The only thing I want to see LeBron do is impose his will. Throw that 275-pound body around.
Come on. He does that. He does that more than enough. He does it more than KD. He does that more than KD shows his length, more than KD shows his scoring ability. KD at times will be out of control. That's the case Kevin Durant I don't like. That's the one I don't want to see. Now, the Kevin Durant I saw yesterday, even though it was sometimes ISO ball, he was hot. I don't care if you're going to play ISO ball if you're as hot as he is. If
Kevin Durant,
down
Kevin
shot,
Durant Kevin, ISO ball is better than 99% of the rest of the world.
It is. I will agree with that.
So
I just want to see Kevin Durant Kevin Durant is too good to ever force anything. He's too good. He's too big. He's too much of a mismatch. There's nobody that can guard him one-on-one. He's too long. He's way too long. I seen a play in the game where he was able to get, I think he was on the right side of the wing, and he made one move, and he jumps from almost the free throw line. He's so long, you can't guard him.
He's a walking mismatch. Because his team has been so weak, other than Russie, go bail us out, and everyone knows that he's going to go bail him out. So you have to force that kind of stuff. And as far as forcing the issue, he is not that guy that forces the issue nearly as much as so many other guys in the league, even a player that was formerly on his own team. Like, don't give me that stuff where he looked out of control.
This past year, I believe he was forcing it just as much as Russell Westbrook was.
Well,
especially
maybe because that was the Thunder's last window. I mean, I think everyone kind of knew that. He was testing free agency. No one knows what Russell's going to do. No one expected them after that injury-riddled season last year. And no one expected them to go 3-1. They were a much better team than what people thought. And, I mean,
cool.
I want – if
how long
if Kevin
Durant
had
Kevin
that
Durant
Mamba
the excuse?
Exactly.
How long are we supposed to give him the excuse? How long are we supposed – I don't want to rain on his parade because he just came home with gold. He played a hell of a game.
Hell yeah, they played a hell of a tournament.
I don't want to it wasn't just one game. I don't want to rain on his parade. All I'm saying is, okay, now it's back to business. Now it's back to, how soon is it before everybody gets back to hating Kevin Durant? Is he still the villain? Is he still the villain once he touches back down?
Who hates Kevin Durant? Oklahoma City? I don't think anyone hates Kevin Durant.
Way more than Kevin Durant. It's way more than OKC that has a problem with Kevin Durant right now. I think a large portion of the NBA fan base has an issue with Kevin Durant.
I see nothing wrong with that. The man from the get went to one of the smallest and worst markets in the NBA, put them on the map, and not only on the map, but in the NBA Finals once and in the Western Conference Finals a couple times, and came that close with an organization that has done shit for him. Like, you know, so if he wants to leave, yes, maybe I wouldn't have went to Golden State, but they offered him a shot. You know, and what's wrong with that? Especially you. How you get off on that when you're LeBron, you're Golden Boy, you're Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh did that.
You're talking about all of that, but I have to go back to LeBron again because he wasn't getting this pass that you're so ready to give Kevin Durant. And everything you just said about Kevin Durant putting OKC on the map and doing this and that for them, LeBron did the exact same thing for Cleveland. Maybe
no,
more.
It,
maybe
I'm not,
more.
I'm not,
oh, don't. Come on. Don't spare me. Come on.
LeBron having a televised thing on ESPN that he got paid for to sit there and be this smug little.
He didn't get paid for that. That money went to charity.
Well,
went to charity.
After the fact. Why even do anything like that? I don't know. Just take a check and send it to charity. Don't sit up there and have an hour-long special about just you.
Come on, man. People got to get grown out here. You're right. That's not the topic. The topic is, yet again, Team USA's dominance over the rest of the world. And speaking of the rest of the world, Jerry Colangelo was quoted basically saying, we're not sorry for smacking the world up the way we do. They got to get better. And I completely agree with him. But my thing is, we first have to understand that I don't think the world will ever catch up with us athletically or basketball wise. First and foremost, I don't think that'll happen.
A lot of it is resources too, though. A lot of it is resources. Like, you have a lot of these third world countries come up here trying to compete. I'm being real. I'm keeping it real. If you don't want to keep it real,
You think we'll catch up to Brazil in soccer?
No, but there are times where the USA men's national team has lucked up, has gotten close. You know, we're not going to be a predominant power over and over and over again because our kids aren't out there playing soccer in the streets. They're out there playing hoops, or hell, they're not even playing hoops. They're in here playing Madden today. Let's not overreact. But, you know, there is an aspect of it when it comes to money and utilities and resources. Like, you know, you see these kids in Brazil trying to play basketball and they're putting, you know, a milk crate on a telephone pole, using a soccer ball to shoot it. You know, it is just what it is. I mean, in some aspects, like, we have more resources. That's why you see, you know, at the top of these medal boards, it's not countries that, you know, invented the game. It's countries that can play the game more often because of what they got. And it's the truth. You got to look at some of that stuff. You know, who's the second biggest, you know, economic power? Well, not economic power, because China's passing the United States, but China's got the resources now. Look, you know, they're the runner up in all this now. It's just the way it is.
I mean, there's something that they have the resources, but realistically, come on. Basketball, you really think that there's going to be another country to be able to compete with us basketball-wise in the foreseeable future, in our lifetime? No.
It'll never be. Like, you know, what was it, 2004, the team that blew the streak? You know, the only way that we are not going to do that is if Jerry Colangelo and the rest of the U.S. National basketball team put a crap quality product out there on the floor. We had this conversation the other day.
Yeah.
That roster for the 2014 was atrocious.
Should have never been out there.
And I'm hoping that they continue to come up with this trend of unity and, you know, pride to play for your country, and guys like, you know, the superstars of the nation actually want to show up and be in the Olympics. Now, it's tough because, you know, the finals literally, if you go to a game 7, end, you know, right before July, and then you got the exhibition games and the summer tournament, and then bang, first 2 weeks of August, you're in it. You don't get an off season. But, you know, I mean, play for your country or go on vacation to the Philippines. You know what I mean? I'm glad that every player that does volunteer and play, you know, more power to them. Kudos. You know, like, I root for those guys a little bit more. I'm glad some of these guys that got a chance that wouldn't normally get a chance, a la Harrison Barnes. Draymond Green, you can kick his fat hot breath off the team anytime. I don't ever want to cheer for him when it comes to basketball.
The crazy thing is, we sent our B team out there. that wasn't even the A team, you know what I'm saying? We sent the B team out there, and it was complete domination. Now, imagine in the future, now you got LeBron saying that he's ready to go next time. This, I would imagine maybe Steph Curry will be there, the Damian Lillards will be there, you know, maybe LaMarcus Aldridge, Anthony Davis. And, I mean, it's going to be a whole new roster. And like you said, I give Jerry Colangelo and Coach K credit for changing the culture of USA basketball, making it so that players feel proudful for going out and representing their country. Because before, if they weren't, it was just a, oh, we know we're better. We don't need to go out there and show it. It took for us to go out there and lose and come back with a bronze medal to show us, look, these other teams, they just, you know, given the right roster, they're just as good. If we're going to go out there and throw our C team out there, sure, they can beat us. And I don't think they really realize how much the bronze medal really, you know, how much flack they were going to catch for that bronze medal. I don't think they really realized what all was going to come with that, how we as a country were going to take us coming back with a bronze medal in a sport that was originated here, a sport that we should be dominating every time we do any kind of international play. It should never be a situation to where us, Team USA, where we have the most prestigious league in the world, should be going out there in international play playing against guys that couldn't even lace up our sneaks. There's no reason we should be going to come back
with bronze. I'm calling it right now, Taiwan. Gold medal winners in Tokyo 2020 men's basketball. I'm telling you, watch out.
You're calling who? Taiwan.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they're making the sneakers. Why not? They starting from the ground up, literally starting from the ground up.
I'm sure they are. Their average players will probably be about 6'3". They wouldn't stand a chance. They definitely wouldn't stand a chance. Nor does the world. It's not them. Like I said, after this, there should be no situation where we're ever having to settle in a situation for anything less than gold.
Speaking of the next round of Olympics, you know, we got baseball, softball. What else is coming in there? A couple X Games. So there's there's a couple other games that
Winter
the
Olympics.
USA will.
Yeah, we got the Winter Olympics.
No, I'm not even talking about the Winter Olympics. I'm talking about 2020 in Tokyo, Japan. They're bringing baseball back. They're bringing softball back. I think karate is going to be one. There's a couple different
baseball
events.
Baseball would be a little tricky. I don't think, you know, baseball is so many international players. That one will be, that's not really our, I don't think that's our prestige right there. But we're good enough to at least go out there and definitely compete for a goal. So, you know,
I don't think we can have pros in that either. I might be wrong on that. I don't think we can have pros in that.
Maybe not. I feel like we can, though. But I could be wrong. Maybe not. Maybe not.
It'll be interesting to see
from the
left.
I mean, definitely. But we could switch from the hardwood to the pool, somewhat to the pool, I guess. Your boy Ryan Lochte, Mr. I Love
Not my boy.
Medals.
We share one thing, and that's the same first name. That's it.
Nah, y'all should. I don't know. This is your boy right here, Mr. I like to break down doors. I like to say that I was basically may come up with my own action film, gun pressed in my head, pull the trigger if you want to. I'm ready to die, Mr. Ryan Lochte. Now, all of a sudden,
the only pool he was good at in Brazil was making a pool of urine on that gas station floor.
Right.
And
yeah.
I got a video to show for it. Dude's a clown. He just got all four of his sponsorships revoked, biggest one being Speedo. But what I did read earlier was Speedo is taking either $50,000 of the proceeds that would have went to him.
Speedo took
$50,000. And sending it to a children's charity in Brazil. So I don't know if that makes up for, you know.
And now Ralph Lauren is also pulled back from him as well. Ralph Lauren and a skincare firm, and they're on Candela, some lotion, whatever it is. They've all been taking endorsements from Ryan Lochte. Lochte is quickly falling to rock bottom. And I think the biggest thing out of this that everybody still wants to know, even after all these interviews, after all the reports and everything, is why did he lie? I still don't understand why he lied. Because me personally, I think that if he was to just even if he told the truth at the beginning, okay, yeah, you broke the door, you paid for the door, you pissed on the wall.
We all get drunk. We all do something stupid.
We've all done that. So I'm trying to understand where the lie was. What made him have to go to this extent to really lie? I don't know what it was he's really trying to hide or what he thought was going to come out of this. I don't know if he really imagined that it would get as bad as it's getting now. But my question is, do you think he deserves what's happening to him now, everything that's going on with him right now?
I mean, right now he's only getting criticized in the court of public opinion, which, you know, hey,
he's losing all his endorsements too. That's how it works.
You know, you work hard to get all these endorsements, get this money, get people to sign on your back and ride your coattails and everything like that. And the second you start kicking in doors and you know, whipping your dinghy out so you can pee because you're just too drunk to hold it for a minute, yeah, they're gonna revoke your stuff for that and much less. Like, you know, it this isn't nothing new. It's just a USA Olympic swimmer who cried wolf and played the victim. That's the thing. He played the victim, but he was actually the wolf in the entire situation. Like, he's just a clown. He put on Twitter, like, you know, I'm sorry, I let my team down. And then I think his very next tweet is, well, I'm changing my hair color back to normal. Like, he don't care. You know, it ain't nothing to him. He don't care. It ain't nothing
to him. It's not at all. I could tell it's not. You can see it in the way he talks. He's not even, yeah, he's apologizing, but I think it's a situation where he's really apologizing because he got caught, not because he did it, not because he disgraced his country, not because he got his team, he set his teammates up, who had to stay behind in Rio while he was gone and had to deal with stuff that really he should have been out there dealing with. And he's not sorry for any of that. He's only sorry because he got caught, and he's sorry for everything that's going to happen to him after the fact. I think he does definitely deserve everything that's going on with him, because sometimes I believe that you need to be penalized just for being stupid. Not for necessarily the wrong action, but just for being stupid. You know, you made a dumb decision, so now you have to pay for it. You have to learn that this is just that to just start thinking things through. I understand it was a heat of the moment situation like that, but if you're going to lie, man, come up with a lie that you can at least somewhat cover your tracks on.
I've never even heard him say, I'm sorry.
That's what I'm saying.
The only words I read are, I over-exaggerated. You didn't over-exaggerate. You created a whole other story.
Yeah, you made a movie out of what happened.
Over-exaggerating is calling somebody who's 5'10", 6'6". That's over-exaggerating. But when you go from the victim, when you actually the villain, that's not over-exaggerating. That's being a fucking clown.
Yeah.
That's what he is. I've never respected the dude.
The bad thing is, it's starting to overshadow. I mean, it's not because because us as American people and the sports media have done a good job of not allowing this to really overshadow everything that's going on. And really, it shouldn't, because everything that went on as far as us winning the Olympics and all the medal counts and all the historical events that went on over there is way bigger than this. This is, you know, this is an ant to an elephant right now. But
yeah, people only remember this in little circles and over little. This is nothing. You know, thank God we had Michael Phelps and Katie Ledeck. Yeah,
right.
It really is, though. Yeah, he's definitely the fool of the Olympics.
Dudes couldn't find a better way to. I'm glad that he wasn't in a situation to where maybe he had won gold that night or anything like that, because this would have really been terrible. It really would have been bigger than it is now, a bigger situation than it is now. I'm glad we have Michael Phelps.
This is his last run, too.
It is.
This is his last run. He just turned 32. He actually turned 32 while he was in Brazil. So I would hate to see what he did for his birthday party down there.
You know what upsets me the most? The fact that in his interview he says that it was him being immature. Dude, you're 32 years old. Immaturity, that excuse died years ago. You know what?
Yeah, he ain't a sophomore.
Right to use the word immaturity. You no longer have. You are 32 years old. How can you still say that you're being immature? You're on a national stage like the Olympics, and you're still saying that you're too immature to go out and have and get drunk with your teammates and go home. You're too immature to do that. No, I don't buy.
Yeah, grab a cute girl, go home. Don't go wreaking havoc all through the streets.
What are you even? I don't know. I don't know.
The whole thing confuses
me. This whole story has been upsetting
me
since the beginning.
I'm over it. I'm so over it. Like, let's talk about anything else. Anything else other than this clown. He doesn't deserve another minute anyways.
We're going to change pace. We're going to change pace and go to our segment that we like to call Take It or Leave It. All right? Each of us get a 30 seconds to give our take. We're going to go rapid fire here. No huddle. Here we go. First one. Paxton Lynch, we all know the Broncos situation, their quarterback situation is trash. Gary Kubiak says he plans to name his starting quarterback after this week's preseason game. Could have sworn he said he hoped to name the starting quarterback after the second preseason game, but whatever. Right now he has three guys, Mark Sanchez, your boy Simeon, and Paxton Lynch. Do you think Paxton Lynch gives the Broncos the best chance to win?
Yes, there's no doubt about it. The Broncos made their success last year off of defense, a crap running game, and everyone loves Peyton Manning, but he played horrible. Paxton Lynch is your first-round rookie. Mark Sanchez has had his chance. He's a turd. Simeon has looked absolutely atrocious. Play Paxton Lynch. Get that goofy, long-armed dude out there, and at least let him get bruised up and messed up a little bit so he knows what NFL football is like. The defense is going to carry you. I'm saying 9 wins, 10 wins tops.
I'm going to take it as well. Paxton Lynch, I think, definitely gives them the best chance to win. The defense will carry majority of the weight anyway. Paxton Lynch, he's more athletic than the other two quarterbacks. And honestly, I believe Mark Sanchez is playing his way off the team, not even just out of the starting job, which is at the start of camp. It was Mark Sanchez's job to lose. He is playing his way right back into the free agency wire. And it's the same story with Mark Sanchez. I don't know how many times we have to watch this movie with him. People continue to think that he's going to turn over a new leaf, but he won't. It's time for us to just accept him for who he is, a bum.
All right, let's do this one then. Steven Strasburg, the boy, the Nats, his recent struggles. Take it or leave it, is his elbow the reason for the struggling?
I'm going to leave it because I feel like that this is just something to save him right now. I understand Steven Strasburg has had plenty of injuries in the past. I'm not denying that maybe his elbow is giving him problems, but I just feel like it's much more. I feel like it's more him than the elbow that's really keeping him from being what he was for pretty much the first three quarters of the season. I'm not really buying the whole elbow excuse. I'm not.
I'm taking it. You can't have Tommy John surgery, which was a career-ending injury 15, 20 years ago, and not go out there and play, you know, every 5 days and throw 110, 120 pitches at 95 miles an hour like he does. It's going to wear on you. It's not a bionic arm. It's a repaired arm. It's like fixing a flat tire. You know, it's a Band-Aid on there right now, and it will wear on you, and it just doesn't last. And mentally, it's hard to overcome that injury. When you start to feel tired – and other things start to come into play, and it won't last for him.
Yeah, it's okay now. Good thing is the Nats have a beast pitching rotation, so we're able to kind of camouflage what's going on with him and just continue
and
on with what we're doing. Yeah, we have the luxury to being able to just put him on the DL right now. But man, I don't want to see this Strasburg come October. If this is the Strasburg I'm going to get, we might as well just go ahead and back like we did a couple years ago and go ahead and put them on ice for the postseason. Next, it's an ex-Washington native, RG3, showing glimpses of old rookie RG3 in preseason, getting the people excited. Take it or leave it, RG3 is primed for a breakout season this year.
No. I am here in Ohio. I watched the last game. I get it. He threw a bomb to Terrell Pryor. He's thrown a couple to Barnage. He's got some run. It is preseason football. No one is showing their cards. No one has their guys out there. He is going to flop, and he is going to fold like a house of cards. And if there's one thing I know about RG3, every time he hits the deck, he looks like one of those dolls from the Crash Test Dummy commercials. And it always takes him 20 seconds to get up. Like, it's like he's time traveling.
I hated that. No. I used to hate watching him get off the ground because every time it did feel like, okay, this is the one that's going to keep him down. But despite all that, I think I kind of want to take it. I don't expect him to have the same type of season that he had in his rookie year, being as effective, but I expect to see a way better RG3. He seems more confident, and it's amazing what confidence can do for you, especially at the quarterback position. I think he could definitely get back to showing glimpses of old RG3.
I think Cleveland is the best fit for him. He's got a chance to be good there, but I think the team is just not built for him right now. All right. Let's go back to your crush, Mr. LBJ, Prince James himself. LeBron
James
says his career is on the Prince James says his career is on the other side of the mountain, but not going down yet. Do you agree?
Of course I agree. How can I just sit here and watch what I watched in the finals and think that LeBron's on the decline? LeBron still has the advantage over everybody that you may try to hold against him, that whenever LeBron feels like he's ready to turn it on and take over a game and be the best player in the world, he can do it. And it's not but maybe a handful of players throughout NBA history that even are allowed to possess that light switch. So that alone, yes, LeBron is definitely still climbing that mountain.
I'm going to go ahead and say take it as well. I mean, he's standing at the top. He's holding the trophy. He's holding the rings. He's holding the keys to his own destiny. But I think what he's kind of saying, and you see it in the news lately, you know, he came back to Cleveland and he gave him a ship, first one in 52 years for the whole city. Now it's kind of a question of what now, like what demon or what beast or what goal does he want to conquer? So you hear him talking about, like, chasing MJ's goat, maybe becoming an owner someday. So he's kind of just testing his waters. He's at the top of the mountain. I don't think he's coming down the other side yet.
Yeah. I mean, LeBron is LeBron. So it'll be a while before. I mean, there's no question that he's no longer that high-flying, super stupid, athletic LeBron that we are used to seeing in the past. No question that he's lost that, but that's going to happen. But his game is so fine-tuned that he doesn't necessarily have to be the guy that's leaping out of the building. LeBron, his IQ is through the roof. As long as he has that, honestly, I think LeBron will always be a factor in the league. There's no question.
Let me ask you this before we move on. LeBron coming out of high school, 18 years old, what was that, 2003? So, you know, he just completed his 13th season. You think we're going to see a lot happen to him like we saw to Kobe? You know, you put miles on those tires, and the tread starts to come off a little bit sooner because, you know, you come into the league younger, maybe not as conditioned, you know, you're putting a lot of extra hours and stuff like that. And, you know, he's 31, about to be 32. You know, he's got years left. I'm not saying he don't, but, you know, you can tell with Kobe, his game developed into a lot of the shots and the fadeaways and stuff like that, but you think LeBron's going to be kind of tailing off physically? I mean, and that's his biggest attribute. I mean, is his imposing will as far as his physicality. He's never going to be a jump shooter. He's never going to shoot that three.
He shot worse
his entire career last year.
He did. LeBron's not a consistent shooter. He is a leveled shooter. And what I mean by that is he's just a game-time scorer. It's all rhythm with him. It's all rhythm. He's not the best three-point shooter, of course. He's not the best mid-range shooter. LeBron, he's a basketball player. He just does everything at a good enough level to where you have to respect it. What I was waiting for was last year, and I kept saying, and I didn't see it until they were down 3-1, was every time that LeBron would decide he's going to take somebody one-on-one from the three-point line, he would go straight to the basket. It was a straight line to the basket. And defenses were able to capitalize on that because they knew he wasn't going to take a jumper. The series, to me, changed when LeBron got enough confidence in that mid-range jumper that instead of going all the way to the paint, he will pull up at the elbow and knock that jumper down. That is his biggest weapon. And I think we're going to see more of that as LeBron gets older. we're going to see more LeBron on the block. I've always said that I think that LeBron is going to be a Karl Malone the older he gets. I expect him to be more on the block. The rebounding won't go anywhere. The playmaking skills really won't go anywhere. And as far as the injuries that you brought up about Kobe and everything,
nah,
I have
it's
enough
not so
faith in LeBron.
The injuries.
But the injuries are a big part in what happened with Kobe toward the end of his career, with him going down because he had so much mileage on his body. I think the difference between the two is, I mean, I don't know what Kobe's workout regime was, but I think LeBron takes super good care of his body. I think that is
one thing
that we all know, that fitness and just total body health and is something that's very important to LeBron. He preserves his body better than anybody I've really
seen.
He'll
tell you all the time about that VersaClimber. That's his best friend, is that VersaClimber.
Yeah. LeBron, I think that's another thing that we have to really realize that we have to add on to why he is so great, is the fact that we're used to seeing a lot of superstar players deal with injuries. Kobe dealt with it. It's a lot of players in any league that has one big injury at one point in time in their career. When is LeBron's biggest injury? But when is it? When is it going to, I mean, it hasn't happened now, and I don't know. I'm not saying it never will. I hope it doesn't. But he just finds a way to stay healthy, and he's always on the court. He's dependable. You know he's going to be there game in and game out. That's one of the biggest things for LeBron. He's so durable. And as long as he's able to keep that, it'll be a long time before we really start watching the fall of LeBron James. I do.
I agree with you on that. It's going to be a lot of it, too, is he's always going to make sure there's someone around him to kind of relieve that stress. You know, it got to the point in the latter part of Kobe's career, you know, when he's in Toronto, to put up 81 points because that team was so whack. And then, you know, you brought in Pau Gasol and all them boys to come in there and kind of ease the pain. But once they left, it was just Kobe. And that, you know, 36-year-old man is out there putting 38, 40 minutes up a game. And that's when the injuries, when he tore his Achilles,
right.
I think he was averaging almost 44 minutes a game.
That was the highest minutes he had had in his career, I think. That year that he tore his Achilles, I think that was the most minutes he averaged per game in a season for his entire career. So he was definitely on time late, and that was playoff time that happened. So, you know, that's really when you really going into overdrive, and, you know, that's Kobe's time, playoff time, when he's really going to go extra. So I can definitely you see why the Achilles happened. But like I said, I just find it hard to believe that can happen with LeBron, because he hasn't shown me yet that it will happen. Does he even get little injuries? I mean, I can't really think of a time where LeBron – I mean, I know he did miss
he did miss
games with Miami. I know he's missed max 2 weeks. That's the most I can think of the LeBron missed
the
at
face,
one time.
The face
weeks.
Mask when everyone was calling him Batman was about the only thing I can remember that was.
Oh, my God.
Too severe.
I wish LeBron never even had – I wish he never even took it off. Some of his greatest moments were with the mask.
No.
The Damon Jones dunk with the clear mask, the Damon Jones dunk, which is arguably my favorite dunk of all time, and then the black mask
he wore. Was he wearing it when he came
over
the baseline on the Celtics dude? Was it
when he jumped over?
Was it Avery Bradley?
No, it wasn't Avery Bradley. I know who you're talking about. I can't think of who it was, but it wasn't this. Was it the Celtics? No. I think was it the Bulls or somebody.
It was Aaron Brooks.
I know what you're talking about. It was Aaron Brooks.
It was Aaron Brooks on the Bulls. I'm about to look it up. Move on to the next thing. I'll look it up.
Yeah, please find that, because it's on the tip of my tongue. I know who it is. But over the weekend, we also had something else going on besides the Olympics. Much anticipated round two, McGregor and Nick Diaz, and it lived up to the hype. I will say, it didn't look like it would at the beginning. McGregor was really taking it to Nate, but as we know, Nate's a bulldog, and he came back fighting. And you know, I was on record last week for saying that I chose Nate Diaz to win the fight for reasons that we saw in the fight was Nate Diaz not going down. I mean, he got knocked down a couple times, but he got back up. And we saw between maybe the late second round, third round, and maybe half of the fourth round, Nate Diaz was pretty much dominating the fight. There are actually people out there that will pick Nate Diaz to win. Yeah.
What fight were you watching? He had McGregor tied.
Once McGregor had tied himself out in the second round, McGregor had just punched himself out. He was literally done. Here's how it worked.
I'm not going to take anything away from that fight. By the way, it was John Lucas that he jumped over on the bull.
John Lucas, the bull. I knew it.
He wasn't wearing the mask. I just found it. But let's go back to this anyway. All right. Nate Diaz, I'm not going to take anything away from it. It takes, you know, a bigger man than me to sit there for 25 minutes and get your face pummeled to where your own mother doesn't recognize you. But I will never like Nate Diaz for one reason. His best attribute, his best skill, and the best thing that he does is get his ass kicked better than anyone else and not go down. And Conor McGregor won the first round, no questions about it. Second round, I think Conor McGregor won that round too, but that's when you saw that switch go in Conor's brain, and he was like, you know, I'm smacking this dude up, and he's still not going down. The third round is when they caught Conor, and that's when Conor got a little bit tired. But in the fourth round, I don't know what it was between rounds, Conor refocused himself. He got his strategy back. He was leading with that leg lift, or that left leg, kicking Nate Diaz's leg, keeping the distance, because Nate is a little bit bigger, a little bit longer, and he was taking the wind out of Nate. As long as Nate wasn't taking Conor down and doing the dirty boxing, Conor won that fight. He was so much more strategic. He was quicker. He was faster.
He was definitely more strategic. I'll give him that. But I want to make it clear, I'm not debating that McGregor won the fight. I'm ready for the third fight. And, yes, I do agree that Nate should have to come down to him. He should have to come down.
It'll never happen.
Hey, I'm not saying it will, but I think it should. And it's good for Nate Diaz to do
everyone
it.
Wants it.
I think it's good for
everyone
him to do it, too, because we want to all see it. I know Nate wants to see it, and I know Nate's competitive enough to where he feels as though he can beat Conor McGregor on any day and on any weight class. He just seems like that type of fighter to me. I love Nate because of the one quote he had at the end of the fight where he said he's too real for that sport. He's the type of dude in the street fight. He's straight street fight, and you, for the reasons that you hate him, is the reasons why I love him. It's the Rocky syndrome. You can sit there and treat this man like a punching bag, and he won't go away. That right there is so defeating for your opponent. I'm not. It's not necessary. It's not like Nate Diaz can't dish it out or doesn't dish it out. We know he does. But it's the fact he doesn't go away. And you could see it in McGregor's face a couple times in a fight that he felt like, what do I have to do? What do I have to do to get rid of this dude? What do I have to do to
There was that point. But here's the clear advantage. McGregor goes up two weight classes to fight Nate Diaz. Now, he finally has been at that weight, that walking weight for some time. So he's used to his body a little bit more. But, you know, he's sitting there trying to smack a dude up who is notorious for getting smacked up, who has this ironclad jaw for some reason. Who knows? He must have been dropped on his head 100 damn times as a child, and you can tell by the way that he talks. But, you know, Conor's sitting there. He's trying to smack him up, but he just doesn't go down. So, you know, what is so great about that?
But what's so great at it is because it's a gladiator sport. He has the heart of a gladiator. You have to respect it. And so many people that go. And how many UFC fights have you seen that get ended in the first 50 seconds? You're not going to see that in a Nate Diaz fight unless he's the one dishing it out. You know, anybody else, they wouldn't even have made it out of the second round against McGregor in that same situation, getting their legs to a bloody pulp.
I get what you're saying. I hate the guys that quit. I hate the guys that sit there and tap out. And we can't sit there and judge because we don't know the pain that they're going through and all this other stuff. And, you know, kudos to him. But look, did Connor quit? No, he didn't quit. There was a point in time in the third round where Diaz had him lights out on his heels, and, you know, he somehow found the wind to survive the round. I'm sitting there screaming, survive the round, survive the round. And he did. He came out that round, and the switch flipped. All right, let me do that lead leg kick. Let me come with the overhand right. And Diaz was so pissed off, and you saw it because he's sitting there pointing at him, flipping him off. Telling him, come on, yeah. come on. Like, you could tell as much
that's
as
nothing Nate Diaz style.
No, it was not Nate getting his head. It was Connor getting in Nate's head because he was not being able to do what he wanted to do. That there was.
Oh
yeah.
Well, yes. Early, I'll give you that. He definitely frustrated him early with the leg kicks. He tore his leg apart. He completely tore his leg apart. You could see Nate was dropping off little things. I mean, I vividly remember Connor hitting him with that one jab, and Nate falling down. I almost felt like that was a situation of Nate saying he didn't want to fight anymore, and I was disappointed earlier. And I didn't even know if he was going to get up. But he got up, and he made it. I wanted to see what he was going to do. I thought the second round it would be over. But he came out in the second round, and it was a whole nother fight. We saw McGregor tie himself out. And honestly, that was the McGregor we saw in the first fight, was him not being
it was.
To really his endurance
level did not
match Nate Diaz.
Because he wasn't used to walking around that weight. You don't realize the significance of gaining 20 pounds to fight.
I don't know if it's necessarily the weight, though. I think it's him getting so used to hitting people with the shots that he hit Nate Diaz with and them not getting up. I think that's really what he was used to. And Nate Diaz is the type of dude that's going to keep
coming. Another thing, too, though. If you're used to hitting these guys at a certain weight class, they're not going to absorb those effects like the guys at a different weight class.
Right.
So it's the same.
I don't want to downplay the fact that he went up in weight class. I understand that. But at the end of the day, I don't think you would have heard McGregor use that as an excuse. These guys are fighters. That's part of the sport. Going up and down in weight class happens in boxing. That's just the reality of the situation.
So the good ones
do it.
The good ones do it. The ones that want to get challenged do it.
Right.
These other guys
are
hide.
Exactly, which is why I believe that Nate Diaz will go down to fight him for that reason. I feel like he's one of those guys that likes the challenge.
He might not get the fight at all.
Are we going to watch him smack? We're either going to watch him beat up on Jose Aldo again, or are we going to sit here and wait for the fantasy matchup of him against Floyd Mayweather that'll never happen?
The Mayweather thing will never happen. That'll never happen. That's a whole different thing. I ain't going to get on that. The only reason I was talking about Nate Diaz and McGregor not fighting is because, I guess, after the fight, Nate Diaz was
smoking cannabis oil
and people all up in arms about it. So, I mean, we'll see.
But he was tested. He took his drug test right after the fight, which was before he started smoking the vapor. So if he passes the drug test, I think we're all good. But if he doesn't, then we do have a situation. And now, yet again, the UFC is in another situation where another one of their fighters is going to have to face suspension due to a drug policy. They are. And I feel like every show we're having to talk about somebody, regardless of it, what sport, somebody is getting suspended for a drug policy. I don't understand. But in Nate Diaz's situation, I'm willing to give him a pass, especially if he passes his drug test. But
he needed something after that fight. Okay. His face was rearranged. His left was on his right.
He definitely needed it. Switching to a lighter note, we're going to go back to – oh, go ahead.
No, you're good.
Well, I was going to go back to the Olympics because, you know, it's been so the way we dominated, it's hard to really talk about it. But I really wanted to – besides us dominating the Olympics, there were so many memorable moments at the Olympics this year, so many records broken, so many first-time winners – with all the different things that went, all the big events that went on at the Olympics, what stood out to you as your biggest moment at the Olympics?
One of my favorite moments, and it's actually going unrecognized, is there was a U.S. Olympian pole vaulter who was getting ready to go into his routine. He's got the pole in his hand. He starts his run, and as he's starting the run in the arena, somewhere else in the arena, the national anthem, United States national anthem, started playing. He stopped, dead sprint, put the pole down, put his heart to his chest, and paid attention to the flag. Now, the significance of that to me is, you know, no one really knew much about this guy, but he was a U.S. serviceman. He is in the military himself. And I just thought it was beyond cool for him to, like, you know, pay respects to him and everyone else. And it's just, it's built in him to just literally, as soon as he heard that song start, even though he was competing for a medal and he ended up getting the bronze, that he literally, you know, what, no matter what the consequence was, he stopped in the middle of his routine and waited for that song to complete before he went back up there and did it. It was just kind of like a story that you kind of went unheard of, and no one knew anything about this guy. But I just thought it was a little bit unique and kind of like one of those underlying stories. That, yeah, you know, he did win the gold and nothing crazy happened and really no one knew anything about it. But I don't know, it paid some respect to the song, to the national anthem, and I just thought it was a cool story. It's just something that stuck out to me.
Yeah. Well, for me, like I said, there were so many different things that went on at the Olympics, so many different memorable events. I mean, from Usain Bolt to the basketball team to Michael Phelps, you know, to Felix on the track. There's so many different things that went on, and of course, to gymnastics, dominating gymnastics again. But for me, what stood out, I'm going to go with the gold medal winning swimmer, Simone Manu, who became the first African American woman to win individual gold medal in the Olympic swimming. She also has ties to New Orleans, and we all know what's going on down there with the flooding and everything. She has ties to New Orleans. She went to Xavier, and I just thought it was big. You saw the emotion that she showed on the podium when she got gold. And she, and really, I mean, yeah, she talked about how it was big for her to be the first black woman to win a gold medal in swimming. But she also wanted to emphasize how much she wanted that gold medal to mean to the city of New Orleans. And with everything that's going on down there, I mean, we've been fortunate enough to not really be able to not really have to deal with too big of an issue. I mean, I know I was here for 9/11 in D.C., but it really, we all know it hit New York way more harder than it hit here. But with everything going on down there, I know it has to feel good to see that there's light at the end of the tunnel and that people are able to go through whatever it is that they go through in their life and still be able to reach dreams that a lot of people would feel as though are just completely unreachable. I know I also brought up to you earlier about the wrestler in the bronze medal game. I can't remember the country that it was, but the guy pretty much basically felt as though he was cheated, and he in a match that he should have won. And he basically ran around for the last point. The judges ended up calling it a tie, and then he got upset about the tie. And because he got upset about the tie, the judges actually ended up giving his opponent an extra point, which ended up giving him the loss. So him
Mongolia,
and his trainer,
Mongolia.
And it, what made it so big, you know, Mongolia only sends a handful of athletes to the Olympics anyway. So I believe that was going to be one of their first, if not their first, Olympic medal. And the judges robbed them of that, and the wrestler and his trainers reacted by taking off all their clothes and throwing it at the feet of the judges. And, I mean, and that's not really a highlight, but it's a big moment. It's definitely a big moment, and I feel bad for that country for having to deal with a situation like that because they were so happy. And it feels like that they pretty much got disciplined for wrongfully disciplined for being happy and celebrating for winning their first medal and then actually ended up getting robbed. And it's tragic. It's a tragic situation, honestly.
Yeah, they ended up only having, because I got it right here, they had one medal in judo, it was silver, and then one bronze in boxing. So that actually would have given them another medal. It's been only their third,
right.
So yeah. And
they don't send many athletes at all out there. So they weren't really gonna win anything. So yeah, that sucks for them. That definitely sucks. But that was just something that stood out to me because it's like, wow, they're really mad. I mean, that's something different that I hadn't seen before. That just an emotion you could tell really meant something.
And final note to kind of jump on that, I don't know if you saw it, and, you know, being the fact that we get on the Xbox every once in a while, we'll be slapping the sticks around to kind of for the closing ceremonies going from Rio to Tokyo. What I thought was extremely cool is the, I think it was the mayor of Tokyo, came up in a Mario pipe portal with the Mario theme song playing in the background, came up kind of signified it. That the Olympics are going from Rio to Tokyo. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, everyone knows Mario. And I thought it was kind of nice that, you know, Brazil was willing to do that and kind of like say, okay, you know, this is over here, but get ready for Tokyo in 2020.
I will say that everything that went leading up to the Olympics and leading up to Rio and how skeptical everybody was, and really nobody really thought that the Olympics would be as good as they were. Rio really did a very good job overall with the Olympics. The opening ceremony was great. I didn't see the closing ceremonies, but I, like you said, I've heard that it was phenomenal. They put on a very good show. They did a very good job. They even the players, even though they stayed on their boat, but everybody that pretty much was around Rio and just out all over, you know, the Olympic town said it was great. They had an excellent time. The accommodations were A1. Seems like Rio really did a good job with the Olympics, and that's good.
One of my favorite pictures of Brazil and the Rio Olympics is, not to beat the Ryan Lochte thing to death, but I think it's the day after the Ryan Lochte story broke and he's playing the victim and the fake police and the gun to his head. There's a picture of Carmelo. And he went out to one of the favelas, which is kind of like a ghetto in Rio. And he's sitting there in the middle of the ghetto, just in a chair with a bunch of kids sitting around him. He's literally just sitting there like he's back at home in New York.
Right.
And they ask him, and they're like, you know, what do you think of this? And he goes, to me, this is no different. This reminds me of home.
Yes.
And, you know, the buildings might be a little bit different.
I was about
to say,
Melo's from West Baltimore. Now,
yeah,
I'm in Morgan State, so I'm on East. I'm on the east side, but West Baltimore, I'm from D.C., so if you see, it's a lot of slums. West Baltimore is the complete slum. I mean, every other street is nothing but abandoned houses, people sitting on the curb. It's pure poverty. And so when Melo say he was acting like he was right at home, I believe him. He was not lying. And that's just a situation that, you know, he's used to being in that type of surroundings. So you can go in there and just walk in there and feel normal. And people in that area, they can sense it. It's a sense, you know. They can tell if you're used to being in those type of surroundings. They can tell
if you act
used
like
to
a fish out of water,
and
you're going to get treated like a fish out of water.
Exactly. And Melo's not – I like Melo. And even go back to LeBron, not just LeBron, but Chris Paul, all those guys. I love these athletes now that are practicing what they preach. You know, they have a platform. These guys are one of the biggest names in sports, and they use their platform for good. With so much negativity that's going on in this country, I just love the fact that these guys are being able to use the power that they have for good.
Well,
I understand that we have to get on them from time to time for sports-wise, but we have to give credit where credit is due.
Well, they are humans, and the reason why I love the picture is because it came right after old Ryan Lochte, the original story, broke out. It was almost it was reinstalling faith into Rio and Brazil, saying, you know, people were all fearful, like, oh, you know, can we go out in the streets? Are we going to get robbed? Are we going to get mugged? And then you got Melo sitting here in the middle of, you know, a Brazilian or a real favela or a ghetto, and he's sitting there just chilling, hanging out. And it kind of it sent a message to the rest of the Americans and the rest of the Olympics and the rest of the world, like, you know, regardless of what happened the night before or what we believed at that one point in time, this place really isn't that bad, and you can feel safe here, and you can, you know, live your normal life and feel like a normal human being without, you know, fear and all this other stuff, because there's way too often people are just so fearful and they just hide behind everything and making excuses. I hate that kind of stuff. So that's one of my favorite pictures.
Nah, definitely. And good job to Team USA out in Rio. Thank y'all for watching our listening to us today on Shaking Up Sports Show. We will see you next time. We out of here.
Peace.